And we will now take a big leap from the streets of Hamburg from 2007 to the Coptic period, jumping to Jacob Steiskal, who is a fellow in the context of the DRS Fellowship Program Postdoc International at the Dahlem Human Humanities Center of the Freie Universität Berlin. His project tries to reconcile anthropological and philosophical theories of art. Previously, he taught at Charles University in Prague, where he received his PhD from the Department of Aesthetics in 2014, and recently published an article called Art Matrix, Theory and Cognitive Distance, Farrago, Preziosi, and Gell on Art and Enchantment in the Journal of Art Historiography. With his presentation today entitled Belting and Summers on Substitution, Jacob is going to discuss what he himself describes as a regeneration of art history through anthropology that, according to him, is a common trait of both German Bildwissenschaft and the tradition of Anglophone visual studies.
Thank you for the introduction. Thank you to the Terra Foundation and to the Deutsches Forum for having me, and also for providing me with the opportunity to visit Paris for the first time. Imagine that. What a shame. Okay, so this is going to be pretty abstract.
Sorry, this is very... This did not work out. I was thinking of a round table. That's good. Sorry. My bad. There you
go. Sorry. Okay. So as I said, this is going to be a bit abstract. My effort is to draw your attention to one similarity between Belting's and Summers's approaches in their work on image theory, or rather, the history of images. One of the major contributions of Bildwissenschaft and visual culture studies has been to draw attention to, and I quote, all the things images do other than signify, end quote. This is coming from Christopher Wood's 1996 paper called, Theories of Reference, that was published in Art Bulletin. As a result, we have no shortage today of theories of iconic difference, agency, pictorial presence, image act, and so on. Commonly, these theories have addressed the non-semiotic potential of images in terms of their power and agency. This discourse has, however, recently invited charges of intellectually rehabilitating animistic superstitions or psychic urges instead of analyzing them. I'm thinking here of Lambert Wiesing's 2013 book, Sehen Lassen, and the same Christopher Wood I quoted from, who just published a paper in the journal Representations, where he basically burns bridges with art history and image theory specifically. But does taking into account the effects associated with material presence of pictures necessarily amount to embracing a position that would ascribe to images a life or agency of their own, whatever that may mean? In this paper, I will reconstruct from two influential accounts of the powerful effects of images a perspective that addresses the iconic power in terms of substitution by image. I will present two independently developed conceptions of substitution by image, developed respectively by Hans Belting and David Summers. For both, it is the fundamental reference of image and prototype that explains the specific power pictures can have over their audience. They refer to what is absent, otherworldly, or even non-existent by making it to some degree visually, palpably present, and thus functional. Importantly, neither of these accounts have room for any spooky iconic agency and remain immune to accusations of a mystic turn. These are as I'm sure you're aware, the famous Fayum Mame portraits. These funerary portraits, originally attached to mummies, dating from the first three centuries of Common Era, and mostly done in encaustic on wood, are considered to be the oldest surviving examples of naturalistic portraiture, that is, of a systematic effort at capturing a person's likeness in paint. The identities of the depicted are mostly unknown, and no written record of the portrait's use, ceremonial, commemorative, or otherwise, survives. As some of these reproductions, namely these two, show, there is an apparent discrepancy between the style of the portraits and the pictorial decoration of the rest of the mummy cases. To an uninitiated eye, the two modes of representation may seem like having been done in different periods by members of a different culture. In fact, both pictorial styles coexisted in Roman Egypt. The portraits mark the intrusion of what is usually referred to as the Greco-Roman style into the ancient funerary imagery of the Egyptians. We can only speculate today what motivated this unusual juxtaposition of two very different pictorial regimes. Is it a symptom of the waning of the Egyptian religion, or a mark of the syncretic mind of the cosmopolitan citizenry of the Roman province? And why going to all the effort of commissioning a surely expensive and elaborate portrait with no obvious place in the Egyptian funerary rites, only to bury it in a tomb? One possible explanation put forward is that, unlike the typical Egyptian sarcophagus, the portraits did not serve as substitutes for the decaying body necessary for the soul's transportation to the realm of the dead, but as means of commemoration, perhaps displayed in the homes of the deceased before they were buried with the mummified corpse. This is the explanation embraced by the two major historians and theorists of the image I'm going to talk about today, Hans Belting and David Summers. The Fayum portraits dramatize for both the clash of two regimes of the image, commemoration and substitution. Belting introduces the topic of substitution by image in his Bildanthropologie from 2001, when discussing his major and controversial claim that the experience of death has played a decisive role in the emergence of picture making. When a person dies, argues Belting, their corpse becomes a mute image that starts to decompose quickly, creating a lasting image that provides the deceased with an ersatz body is interpreted by Belting as a practice of coping with the mystery of death. This mystery rests in the experience of absence of life that speaks through the presence of the corpse. And this mystery also becomes the mystery of the image. Absence is grounded in presence. At the same time, by assuming the status of the deceased, the substitute image is introduced to restore social balance of the community of the living. This interpretation resembles closely the logic famously applied to medieval royal effigies by Ernst Kantorowicz. These effigies, placed on the royal coffin during funeral, displayed the regalia and embodied the royal dignity that lived on despite the demise of the ruler. Such a substitute image can potentially become even more powerful than the living body, Belting claims, as it extends the social realm to the world of the ancestors. Belting argues that images that serve as substitutes for the deceased require ritual practices attached to the cult of the dead, which are meant to aid the process of substitution towards embodiment. Once these practices are not in place, the images easily lose their substitutive power and become, at best, mere means of commemoration. According to Belting, pictures that stand in for bodies as media of embodiment thus do not necessarily rely for their authority on their close resemblance to what they represent. Because the physical medium has been put to use and sanctioned by a specific practice, it does not have to derive its validity as an image from sharing the same visible features with its prototype. In this, substitutive images differ from what Belting calls mimetic images, functioning as media of remembrance. Belting treats the concept of the mimetic image as an invention of the Greek culture, constituting an exception among other ancient cultures in that it has rationalized away the idea of image as embodiment. This rationalizing was codified in Plato's philosophy, through which the medium that represents is always at a remove from the truth of the represented. Material embodiment becomes devalued and images reduced to their mimetic function. When they make a claim to embodiment, they are demasked as subject to superstitious projections. Belting, however, insists that perceiving pictures as substitutions for absent persons in the cult of the dead did not imply mistaking dead matter for that endowed with life of its own. Pictures acquired a real presence by embodying the absent through a symbolic, ritualized act. By dissociating image from the idea of embodiment, representing the dead through pictures becomes just a matter of commemoration. According to Belting, it is this understanding of image as representation, separated from its substitutive function, that the Western modernity inherited. Belting discusses Fayum portraits in this context, that is, as an invasion of the Greek imagination into the world where images retain the power to embody, make present an absent body. These portraits mark the disempowerment of pictures, their deflation into mere indexes of absence. Painted on bundles, they were self-standing portraits attached to mummies, not integral parts of them as substitutive bodies. A somewhat similar line of argument is independently pursued in David Summers' monumental book on world art history, Real Spaces, from 2003. His understanding of substitution by image is fully developed in chapter 4 of that volume, but it is also related to the central notion of real metaphor Summers introduced already in 1991. As opposed to verbal, real metaphor substitutes for something or someone in their absence in real space. This real space determines the possibilities and functional manageability of the substitute. Just as verbal metaphor requires linguistic context, grammatical and syntactic circumstances, so the real metaphor requires a spatial context. To use the example famously introduced by Gombrich and further developed by Summers, only in a specific space will a broomstick become a hobby horse. And not just any object can take on the role of a hobby horse. It must be something a child would manage to saddle as opposed to a real horse. This also indicates that a real metaphor can serve to instantiate an empowerment and its manifestation. According to Summers, in most of the world cultures, images have played the role of real metaphor, which together with their surrounding spaces have, as he puts it, constructed desire, fixing by means of substitution what is desired. More often than not, a real metaphor is distinguished by elements that make it stand out or draw attention, according to Summers. When such addition occurs, the object becomes, in Summers' terms, an icon. Icons are not just substitutive, but additive, because they mark the substitution by drawing attention to their materials or resemblances they affect, thus, and I quote from Summers, adding specific powers to presence, end quote. The purpose of an icon is to assemble powers and I quote again, make them present in a new unity, end quote. To make an example relevant to our purposes, images of pharaohs in ancient Egypt tended to be iconic, Summers claims, because their role was the manifestation and preservation of status. By contrast, effigies, another technical term Belting defines anew, I quote, take their primary authority from causal or indexical relation to what they reproduce, end quote. They draw their meaning from an established contiguity between them and their prototypes. There is thus often a certain realism attached to images with the value of effigies, because the index-like quality associated with naturalistic tracings of the prototype serves as a proof of contact. Icons as substitutive images, on the other hand, tend towards schematism. Thus, for Summers, the traditional schematic mummy mask is substitutive and iconic, whereas the Fayum portrait that succeeds it veers towards the effigy-like. For Summers, the Fayum portraits illustrate the world historical development towards virtualization by transposing originally three-dimensional and schematic masks onto flat surfaces, which acquire virtuality as an effigy-like and an effigy-like quality, thus becoming, I quote, a more satisfactory image, end quote. As Summers argues, icons as means of instantiating power and agency often combine resemblant features that, taken together, are not after anything observable. The Assyrian guardian figure from the British Museum, originally guarding the entrance to the palace of Sargon II, combines features of a bull, an eagle, and a human being. According to Summers, Western metaphysical tradition, dating back at least to Aristotle, treats such composite figures as the result of fancy, the externalization of an imaginative combination of mental images stored in memory. In this tradition, mental images are indexes, in fact, effigies of real shapes impressed on our senses. But, Summers claims, such a line of reasoning puts icons like the guardian figure in a normative horizon alien to the norms motivating their production, which explains, and I quote, why icons, in Summers' sense, are so hard for us to understand, end quote. Summers goes on to argue that the effort to provide resemblant images on surfaces with the value of an effigy, the authority of an elaborate overall trace, dominates the modern project of optical naturalism. Thus, the Occidental mind, Summers argues, tends to treat all images, even icons, as effigies, as causally linked to the appearance of their assumed prototypes. The result is that they cannot be treated as real metaphors, true icons, since they now cannot substitute, but only bring to memory what they resemble. Now, both Summers's and Belting's accounts of substitution are anchored in an ultimately moral grand narrative about Western conceptualization of the image rooted in Platonic and Aristotelian metaphysics, and thus not doing justice to the substitutive potential of images. It would be interesting to make explicit the, what I believe are Heideggerian motives implicit in both these grand narratives, and discuss its possible sources and consequences. But instead, I want to conclude by concentrating on the logic of substitution embraced by both authors. Abstracting from the specifics of the respective accounts, the general formula of substitution by image may be phrased thus. The power of images to acquire real presence and exercise agency resides in their ability to take on a function / functions in virtue of material reference, that is, in their being perceived as embodying some aspects of their prototype. These functional aspects, however, do not have to be narrowly understood in terms of visual resemblance. Belting's somewhat controversial speculations about the link between picture-making and the experience of death should not distract us from the crucial suggestion he makes, namely that the substitute may acquire the efficacy of the substituted merely by satisfying certain ritual or ritualized criteria that allow it to fulfill its role. hence the possibility of the apparent contradictio in adjecto, an iconic image. Equally, Summers's no less controversial speculations about the world historical move towards virtuality should not distract us from his important point, namely, that the substitute may acquire the efficacy of the substituted merely by satisfying certain spatial, locational, and logistical criteria that allow it to fulfill its role. Now, one serious empirical challenge to Summers's and Belting's interpretation of the significance of Fayum portraits is that recent research has made the hypothesis that the portraits served a commemorative function independent of the funerary context less plausible. For example, the archaeologist Christina Ricks has, to me at least, convincingly interpreted the naturalistic style of the portraits not in terms of an intrusion of a new pictorial function, but rather in terms of an assimilation of the Greco-Roman mode of representation for the purposes of the Egyptian burial rites. I quote her conclusion: "The faithfully reproduced Greek image was adapted to suit Egyptian burial practices and to express an Egyptian concept of death." End quote. Ricks claims that the portrait's naturalistic features served to bolster the substitutive function of the mummies, a claim at odds with the two narratives presented above. But even if Summers and Belting were wrong in interpreting the function of the Fayum portraits, such a mistake would not discredit the substitutional model they have each developed, for neither of them commit the mistake of deriving modes of attitudes towards the image strictly from modes of pictorial representation. What distinguishes commemorative from substitutive images is not necessarily the naturalism of the former and the schematism of the latter, though these may be symptoms of these functions. Images that have served the role of substitutes, can take on the role of memorials and vice versa, something that Summers also explicitly allows. We should thus better consider substitution by image not as a category of images set up against its opposite, the category of commemorative images, but rather as a function that can be associated with both with schematic icons as well as naturalistic effigies. As the graph shows, Fayum portraits could possibly serve both the commemorative and the substitutive function. Under Summers/Belting's description and Ricks's description, respectively, and the same goes for the schematic mummy masks. Thank you.